The recording has started.
Great. Thank you so much. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the RPM TMCH Subteam Working Group call on the 9th of September at 1500 UTC. On the call today, we do have Jeff Newman, Sarah Clayton, Edward Morris, Kurt Putz, Philip Corwin, Susan Payne, and Kathy Kleiman. We have no apologies. From staff, we have David Tate, Antonella Mangiacati, and myself, Michelle DeSpider. I would like to remind you all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. And with this, I'll turn the call over to David Tate.
Thank you, Michelle. This is David Tate speaking for the record. Good afternoon, everyone. And we do have apologies from my colleague, Mary Wong, who's unfortunate with us today because she's out on leave. Could I therefore ask you to cast your eye to the agenda, which is in the pod on the right-hand side of the screen. You'll see there's three items, two substantive items and one smaller item for discussion at the end if we have time. We've now got 55 minutes remaining for this meeting. So turning to item one on the agenda and the discussion of the sub-team review of the charter questions relating to the Trademark Clearinghouse. As you'll see loaded on the document in front of us, on the screen ahead of you is a list of charter questions which have been reviewed by a team of Susan Payne and Christine. And on that basis, I'd like to ask Susan if you'd perhaps like to take us through the list and the analysis which you've given beneath.
Yes. Hi, it's Susan here. Hopefully you can hear me. Yes, it looks like it's working. Yes, and apologies that not to get this out to the list a bit sooner. And so, I mean, I don't know to what extent you'll all feel that it's worth going through this on this call, or whether you have an opportunity to read and review and come back to it. But just to basically to briefly at least introduce the document. This is a list of the charter questions that relate to the TMCH that were captured a little while ago by Mary. And some of them are in the charter specifically against the TMCH, and then a couple of them have been sort of brought in because they're listed against some other part, like the claims or the sunrise. But clearly, you know, seem pertinent to the TMCH investigation. And then there are also, towards the end, sections B and C are kind of additional questions that have been captured as we've along the way. I think the first group of questions came up in the Helsinki meeting, and then some, I think, probably came up in meetings of the wide RPM's working group. And again, Mary had captured them. So probably for the focus, the charter ones are the ones where we and when I say we, I mean the wider RPM's working group is tasked with answering or considering. And then the others are may or may not be helpful. They're certainly ones which members of the working group thought would be useful ones to be considered. So we probably, certainly for today, if people want to quickly go through it, I think probably the best thing is to sort of focus on Section A, which is the ones that are actually the charter questions. And what Christine and I were hoping to do was sort of have a look at the questions in turn and then try and determine what kind of data could be gathered and to the extent that we could, what the source of that data might be. Although, in fact, as we started to go through it, on question one, for example, we actually needed to take a step back even from that because the question one, as you can see, says, should further guidance on verification guidelines for different categories of marks be considered? And we found ourselves, as we were trying to think about what data could be captured or where would be the source, we were actually having to make assumptions about what it was we were trying to answer, if you like. So we felt that the initial question was really, you know, to identify what is the problem that question was referring to before we before actually we could really go on and try and work out how to answer it or how to source data in order to allow the working group to answer it. Because, you know, I can make an assumption on what I think might be the problem with the verification guidelines, but I don't know. And that question, it seems to me, must have come up as a result of either the staff RPM's review or the draft issue report, or both, and presumably was raised in the context of those consultations by someone, and presumably identified a particular concern that someone or more than one person had. But so we felt that that there's an initial stage, which is the need to go back to those documents to work out what it is that's actually being, that actually needs to be fixed, if you like. And no one's got their hands up. I'd be really delighted if people just want to sort of leap in and discuss these as we go through, if you have the time to do it. Or, as I say, if people think that it's too soon when you haven't really had a chance to look at the document, we can defer to another time. But, I mean, I'll just pause anyway in relation to question one. I mean, does that sound like a sensible approach to people on the wider group? Or is anyone confident already that they know what that question was sort of seeking to investigate? Kathy.
Hi, Susan, thank you for so much work. This is Kathy for the record. And I have to say, I haven't reviewed this document yet. So we could go through it, but all you'd be doing is getting a top of mind kinds of thoughts. So thank you so much for sending it out. And I apologize. I prepared for the questions for the question list that we were working on. I didn't prepare for this, so I'm sorry that I missed it. But I'm not sure discussion would be fruitful right now. Would you object? Can we do this next week? Or would you want to do a quick run through and then we'll do the discussion next week?
Yeah, why don't I do that? I mean, it took us sort of a bit longer than we thought, and indeed, you know, with more time, I think even Christine and I would have, you know, ideally would have wanted to time on it. So yes, but I did also feel that, you know, there's a benefit to getting things out to people to have a look at. And very much as I indicated in the email, it's kind of quite rough and ready. It's a starting point. I would definitely hope that as a group we can improve it. But so yes, I'm happy to kind of just whiz through for now and let people sort of think about it, if that's okay.
That would be great. Okay. Overview would be great. You thanks so much.
Is that? Oh, okay.
Nope.
Good. Thanks. Yeah. All right. So that was the first question, and the kind of approach to it. The second question was, is the protection in the TMCH too broad? Is the TMCH providing too much protection for those with a trademark on a generic or descriptive dictionary word? And so we did have sort of initial reaction, which was that obviously a recordal in the TMCH of itself does not actually prevent anyone from registering any term. It is the recordal gives the trademark owner a priority in order to register during sunrise if they choose to do it. So to some extent, this question does ask the group to be rethinking the purpose of giving that priority to brand owners. When it's saying, is there too much protection or is it preventing? But in any event, moving on, the sorts of data that we thought would help go to that would be other examples of generic terms that were entered into the TMCH and were used to secure Sunrise registrations. And are there examples of trademark terms that maybe the counter to that, were there examples of trademark terms where they were not, where brand owners were not permitted to register during the sunrise by some registries because they were sort of blocked or reserved or viewed as premium? And are there examples of claims notices having been received in relation to generic terms, but where, you know, where the registrant didn't then proceed? I have to say, you know, some of this may well be extremely difficult to gather this data, or even not really possible. But as I say, this was kind of a brainstorming as a starting point. Kathy.
I know I said I wasn't going to discuss anything, but I just wanted to point out that I think it, maybe we should use this, the way you're going through the questions to help us with the data gathering, because we're finalizing that list today. But in terms of knowing that people are turning around on generic words, we know the answer to that. The analysis group told us that. That's a yes in a big way. So, you know, that it's really helpful to actually have them, you know, as narrow as their mandate was, the analysis group gave us a resounding yes on this one.
They may have done, I'm not sure that I agree with you, but I don't think they went further in terms of establishing why that was and whether it was, well, I think analysis groups should have gone further.
I agree, but just you know, anyway. So I'm gonna use this, and maybe others can too, as we get to trademark plus 50 and others. You know, are there things that are being raised? One way to use this today is: are there things that are being raised in these charter questions as we go through them in such detail? Which I thank you for, or at least the overview. Are there things here that trigger additional data? You know, additional questions we could be asking the providers, the registries, and the registrars as we close those questions today. Thanks. Return to you.
Well, that was exactly why we were doing this, to help inform the questions we were asking of people, which is why, that was the purpose of this exercise. So it may be that we can't close those questions today because there may be other questions in here, if you know what I mean. But that was the reason for trying to go back to the charter questions.
Then I'm duplicating our original mission. Great. Thank you. Thanks. Let me let you go on. Thanks so much, Susan.
Okay. And I don't know. It looks like good. It looks like people can scroll down. So the next one was, you know, should TM plus 50 be reversed? And some of these charter questions are quite presumptive, but, you know, so it seemed to us that what is that asking? It's saying, are there examples of terms on the TM plus 50 list which were effectively, you know, preventing a legitimate registration? So one question to be asked would be, what are the safeguards or criteria that exist to provide reasonable limits on the use of the TM plus 50? And we thought some of the data that might be useful in informing that is, like, how many records are there that have a plus, you know, that include a plus 50, and on average, how many are they? How many claims notices have been sent for domains that are on the trademark plus 50 list? How many of them resulted in the domain registration not proceeding? Kurt?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. So I think everything you said is right, and so I was going to try to give an example for number two, if we don't mind going back to that. So where we have under data gathering, are there examples of generic terms not in genuine use as trademarks that were entered into the TMCH to secure Sunrise registrations? So that's not really, yeah, so that's another question we want answered, but it's not really data. And so I'm trying to figure out how to turn that into a request for hard data. And as you pointed out on that one, it's, and on some of these, it's really difficult. But I think we could get to that. And then so the example I typed into the window was about the third one down, about claims notices. Are there examples of claims notices being received in relation to generic terms and, and so on? And I think the data gathering we could do on that one would just be to ask for the abandonment rate during claims versus abandonment versus non-claims period, and it would give us some sort of indication about chilling's probably the wrong word, but what sort of chilling effect the claims period has on potential registrants, and that could tell us, you know, whether it could be the protection could be too broad or not too broad. We could also ask for the number of, I forgot how this works, but the number, oh yeah, the number of registrations, pre-claims and post-claims to see, of trademark names to see whether the claims notice period is too long or should be extended, something like that. So anyway, my big point, I've talked too long, is, you know, I think we want to take these data gathering questions and really try to turn them into hard data that's really just numbers. So I can help with that when I review the document during the week.
Sorry, I was on mute there talking away. Thanks very much, Kurt. That's great. Thank you. Christine.
Thanks, Susan, and thanks for taking the lead on this while I was struggling with my phone this morning. You may have mentioned this already as you told the group a little bit about what we were going through, but I wanted to just chime in when I heard Kurt's response, because what you are proposing and what you are doing is exactly what Susan and I were hoping, that this sort of problem identification, data gathering, source, like sort of going through the charter questions, would prompt people to say, to ask the question, you know, if this is the proposed problem, you know, how could we gather data? And then to, like, further refine that into hard numbers. So right now we're putting data gathering, at this point in some cases it's anecdotal. You know, do we even have an anecdote? Because in my opinion, once we have an anecdote or two, that will provide us a little bit more, okay, so how do we back this up? How do we verify the anecdote? And from there, we can really come up with some ways to get hard data. So I just wanted to support what Kurt said and say that your sort of taking this to the next logical step was exactly what we were hoping this group would do, because this was definitely outside, you know, at least my expertise. I am not going to be able to figure out how to get all this data. But that's what the amazing brain of this group can do. Also, I did, to further Kurt's point, I just put into the chat, and for those of you on the call, I'll read it. I received an email from a registry. I had solicited some comments, and a registry had sent me a point that said they were aware of a mark that had been entered into the Tamarack Clearinghouse that was in this registry's opinion, a fraudulent mark. And it was only there to sort of to sort of game the system. And I'll just read what he said. It is an IDN domain name, and it's Russian characters, so I'm not sure how to pronounce it. And it says it was obtained by a person with interest in selling brick-and-mortar kinds of goods, such as drills and concrete. When that Russian word or Cyrillic characters is translated from Russian to English as the word we, like you and I. Currently, the website tends to be a social network, and in reality, it just pumps some news in order to look valid. The gating party, neither known with any kind of product nor invented anything beyond using the Trademark Clearinghouse to obtain a good generic word. So this was an example of somebody who may have been gaming the Trademark Clearinghouse. So this is the sort of thing that I'm hoping for, is anecdotes that will then let us try to figure out, you know, how to verify and validate these anecdotes. Thank you. Go ahead, Susan.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay, I'm going to try and whiz through these a bit faster, because actually otherwise we won't actually have time to talk about the questionnaire, the other questions. But I think we've got to four, which was, are there legitimate non-commercial and individual registrants who are losing legitimate opportunities to register domain names? And it seemed to me that that's basically pretty much seeking the same kind of information, or it's the same kind of question around generic and descriptive words as question two. So, you know, moving on. The next one is, how should the TMCH scope be limited to apply only to categories of goods and services in which generic terms in the trademark are protected? I don't particularly like that question quite how it's phrased, but I'm choosing to interpret it as should that limitation happen. But again, I think that when you look at that question, I think it's essentially going back to the same question again, question two, which is all around are trademark owners getting wide protection for generic and descriptive terms, and perhaps wider than they ought to. So moving on to six, it's around the matching rules and whether they should be expanded or not to include plurals and marks contain and marks plus keyword. And so I think the question is there a significant level of trademarking infringing domains which are consisting of the expanded matches and which are not being protected at the moment, and therefore do we think wider protection is required? And so in order to look at that, we'd need to see if there are examples of domains that are registered by third parties which would fall within the scope of what an expanded match would look like, and how that compares with overall registration levels in new GTLDs, and are there examples of trademark owners perhaps who were unable to secure a name in the Sunrise because of the narrow matching rules and then missed out on registration in general availability because someone else registered the name first. So, you know, whether someone who might legitimately have expected to want to protect their brand in the matched form or in the expanded match form and lost it. Some of this is somewhat covered in the analysis group report, although they didn't consider mark plus keyword. It seems off the top of my head very much, you know, that the other places that we would have to go to try and seek that data is from perhaps looking at zone file data and talking to trademark owners and the like. But as I say, I'm going to move on very fast. Seven is, are there additional or should there be additional or different recourse mechanisms to challenge rejected trademarks? And I felt that this one needed some kind of additional background into what was the problem that was leading to this question as well. And to some extent, what are the current TMCH recourse mechanisms for rejected marks and how are they perceived to be inadequate or unfair? I'm assuming, as with the question that was the first one that we talked about, somewhere along the line during the staff RPM review or the issue report that led to this charter, someone has raised this as an issue, but it's not clear to me what their issue is, and so it's difficult to go on to talk about whether we need different recourse mechanisms until we've understood what the recourse mechanisms currently are and what the perceived problem with them is. Then next one is number eight, is how quickly can cancelled trademarks be removed from the TMCH, and we've been talking about that a little bit on our previous calls. So the question is, you know, what's the TMCH process, if any, for when marks cancel or are expired? You know, either to the extent that there's obligations on the trademark registrant to be notifying them and maybe declarations that they give, or whether there's anything proactive that the TMCH does. I've got a question from Kurt in the list. In the chat, which says on seven, how many marks were rejected? What is a breakdown of the reasons? Yes, thank. I think he's saying that's another source of information, and that sounds very useful. Thank you. Back to eight. Yes, for the cancellation of marks. I think it should be possible for us to find out how many SMD files have been cancelled in the TMCH, from the TMCH. I would assume that they have that information. And there is also part of the TMCH has a dispute process, and it's possible to bring a dispute action in relation to where you allege that the trademark is not valid or is no longer valid. And so, equally, there should hopefully be data from the TMCH on the number of those disputes, if indeed there have been any. And then one of the heads of a Sunrise dispute resolution process that registries offer tends to be around whether the Sunrise registration was acquired on the basis of a mark which was actually expired or cancelled. And so again, that data ought to be available within registries if we can get it from them. pausing quickly. Okay, so moving quickly on then to nine. Nine is how can TMCH services be much more transparent, in terms of what is offered pursuant to ICANN contracts and policies versus what is offered to private new GTLD registries pursuant to private contracts. And I have to say, I personally am not entirely clear what that question is seeking to answer. I think it's asking about what is the TMCH doing that it's required to do under its contract versus what is value-added services that they're not obliged to offer, and can there be more transparency about whether they're using the trademark data that trademark owners have submitted for the purposes of offering other services. But that one's not entirely clear to me, so I feel, again, this is one where there may be there's a kind of issue identification process that needs to go through first. And 10 is, should there be a review on accessibility to the TMCH for individuals, private trademark holders, and trademark agents in developing countries? Again, there may be something of an issue identification here. But there certainly should be, it should be possible to gather data around geographic distribution of those who've recorded marks in the TMCH, although we would obviously have to bear in mind that you may be a brand owner in one country and use a TMCH agent in another country for some reason, and also that the country of the registration of the mark is not necessarily indicative of where the trademark owner comes from. I think it's quite common for people in not based in the U.S. to have relied on U.S. marks, for example. Curtis saying, is it telling that we as experts cannot always understand the meaning of some of the charter questions? Yes, indeed. But that may simply be a failure of mine, and perhaps our collective hive mind may be able to work it out. And then the final one was, the final question 11 is around the TMCH providing education services not only to trademark owners but to registrants and potential registrants. And I think, you know, that's quite clear. You know, there's a clear question there about what education services have they been provided and to who. And actually, it's also another question, which is actually does the TMCH have any contractual obligation imposed by ICANN to give any education? I don't know the answer to that. I'm sure ICANN do. It would be in the ICANN contract. I don't think we can have access to that, but ICANN staff would be able to tell us whether the TMCH has any educational obligations. And I think probably in the interest of time, I think I'll stop there because that's the charter questions. And the remaining questions, as I say, are the ones that were captured during sessions of the working group, either in person or some of the early ones that we had on the phone. So that's been a really quick canter through, but I do think it would be really, if people think it would be helpful, I think it certainly would, to kind of use these charter questions as a way of identifying, you know, additional questions we can ask in terms of data gathering. And sort of, you know, as Christine was saying, either, you know, to the extent that we can, anecdotal, or to the extent that there's, you know, hard data that we can gather. And I really do think that, you know, as a sort of collective mind, we will probably be able to hone this significantly and improve it. So that was the kind of aim of bringing this to the group. Kathy.
Yeah, Susan, this is really, really cool. It's fascinating. It's important. But, hey, we're starting the TMCH this coming week. And we're actually going through these charter questions in the working group this coming week. And so I think in some ways you've laid the groundwork for the analysis that the working group has to do, but from a perspective of the low-hanging fruit, to continually quote Kurt, don't cringe, Kurt, sorry, but I love that phrase, I think we should finalize the questions for the providers. I think the charter questions, I personally think that this is an important analysis. I think this is what the working group's gonna start to do. And so I don't know. I just wanted to share that I think our job is to get the questions out to the providers, the registries and registrars, for the low-hanging fruit as quickly as possible, and then go back and do this kind of interpretation with the full working group. Because I think we're going to find many drafters of these questions in the working group. And while we may not be able to shed light on what they meant, I'll bet, you know, somebody's going to raise their hand and say, I know exactly what that means. This is what I intended when I asked that question. And I think that wealth of experience will be great. Thanks.
Kurt, you have your hand.
Yeah. So, thanks. So, Kathy, even though you quoted me, I'm going to disagree with you a little bit. I think, you know, I think this is really good work that's been done here that, you know, we've gone back to the charter questions. And so I think it's worth it to take an additional step and try to translate the data gathering list here to see if we can translate that pretty easily into what hard data we could ask for and see if that's included in the questions we have already or not, just to see if there's any big holes. So I think like 80% of the work's done. So I think we could easily, you know, do some additional analysis and see if anything pops out here where we should augment the questions. I can help these guys out some, and we could probably do that in a few days. You know, you'd hate to have some, you know, some more low-hanging fruit pop out of these questions that we didn't include in the other ones.
But you think that can be done in, you know, quickly? Because I think the answers to the questions we've already compiled would be extremely useful. Sorry, this is Kathy.
Yes, I agree. So when do you want? Yeah,
extremely useful, really, really soon to the working group.
Yeah. I think.
And then we'll go back for.
I'm going to be sitting in the car for the next 72 hours. So.
Oh, lucky you! Yeah. 72 hours. Wow. Okay, that sounds great. Christine, go ahead.
Okay, I can. Yes, sorry. Oh, hi, thanks. Christine from Amazon. I just wanted to, I agree with Kurt. I think that the point of this exercise wasn't to go through and spend 10 weeks hashing out each charter question. I agree with you, Kathy. This is not the purpose of this group. We're not here to hash out every charter question to the, you know, great detail. We really wanted to just go through, figure out really quickly who we would have gone to get data or anecdotes or whatever, try to figure out that low-hanging fruit so that we can make sure that we send as much low-hanging fruit questions as we can at one time to the providers. So I think I agree with Kurt. We don't want to dig too deep, but we do want to make sure that we've got all the low-hanging fruit. And I agree with you, Kathy. We do not need to take 5 more weeks on this because, as you said, the Trademark Clearinghouse, the RPMs group is starting the Trademark Clearinghouse review. So we do need to get moving on this. And I think that this is a great, I mean, those of us who've gone through this work now, I think we're in a really good position to sort of guide the discussion as well with some of this information.
Susan, you've got your hand.
I have. I was just going to say, perhaps unsurprisingly, I'm with Christine and Kurt on this. And yes, I mean, there may be cases where, you know, we've said the question's not very clear. We need to work out what the problem is first. Well, then that's probably not a low-hanging fruit. But I think, you know, either already overlap with the questions we're asking or, you know, would help to inform and tweak the questions we're asking or add to the questions we're asking. And I do think it would be a valuable advice to do that rather than miss the opportunity when we're putting a question into one of the providers or to you know, a registry or whatever, that we miss the opportunity to ask a question that with, you know, not a great deal more work we could be asking them.
So Kathy asked the question in the chat. Great, so good time to move to finalizing the questions we have.
And let me define finalizing. This is Kathy. Before we, I think it would be great to go through, here's my proposal, to go through the list of questions compiled already. There are a number of questions and issues that have been raised. Let's see if we can go through that. We've only got 20 minutes. And that way, maybe we could clear the track changes currently on the list of questions that we have, that second document, not this document up on the screen, but the second document. And that gives us maybe a clean or almost clean document for whatever changes get, for whatever additions, because I assume it's going to be additions, get put in based on Susan and Christine's document. Is that fair? Should we move forward? Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Kathy. With that in mind, I'll just pull the new document up on. And the version we have in front of us is, I think, is the version that Susan circulated around 20 minutes before the start of this meeting. And as you can see, there are questions and comments on the right-hand side of the screen.
So, David, this is Kathy. Jeff, are you on the line? This question keeps – it's a really hard first question to hit people between the eyes with, but I wanted to read it out loud and see if whoever drafted it would explain it. I think it's Jeff. So, for blocking mechanisms offered by new GTLD registries, a valid SMD file from the TMCH is required. Is there a limit to the number of domains or GTLD extensions that can be blocked with a single unique SMD file? I'm just going to share. If that's the first question we give to the working group, we're going to have everybody's eyes crossed, but nonetheless, you know, or share with the working group. But if whoever wrote that could explain it, it looks like there's a lot of questions about it. Thanks.
This is Jeff. I'm not sure I wrote that. Can you just read it again, and maybe I can discern it?
Sure. So for, quote, blocking mechanisms, close quote, offered by new GTLD registries, comma, a valid SMD file from the TMCH is required, period. Is there a limit to the number of domains or GTLD extensions that can be blocked with a single unique SMD file?
Yeah, I don't think I drafted that question. I'm not sure. Is it who is that question to? That question's to the registries?
Yes, to the registries.
Is there a limit? Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to interpret that. I think the limit is only the number of registries that that registry operator is responsible for. Is, read that second part again. Is there a limit for...
Is there a limit to the number of domains, comma, or GTLD extensions, comma, that can be blocked with a single unique SMD file question?
So I think Donuts did offer a the ability to block the mark plus generic word. You have to pay more money. But so, like, if your mark was Microsoft, I think they did allow, you know, you to block Microsoft software dot whatever.
And that's without it being a TM plus 50. That's not a TM plus 50 issue.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So that was not a TM plus 50. So I didn't draft that question. I'm not sure I would ask that something that pointed. I would just say, you know, please describe, you know, what marks you were or what you were able to block with a given SMD file, as opposed to, is there a limit?
David, did you capture the rephrasing? Does anybody object to the rephrasing?
Kathy, just to note that Susan has her hand up.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I'm not. Go ahead, Susan. David, I'll let you moderate. Thanks.
Hi, Kathy. It's Susan. Sorry. It wasn't my question. I think I can't remember what it originally looked like, and that was a sort of redraft from staff to try to make it clearer. But I probably Jeff's restatement is probably clearer still, which is let's not get into the detail and let's just say, you know, what can you cover with a single SMD file or, you know, what, yeah. So I think I agree with Jeff's restatement. I think something more less detailed and less precise is probably going to get a more useful answer.
Thanks, Susan. Unless there are any objections to that question, we'll incorporate that in the notes of the meeting and have that amended in the redraft that's prepared. Moving on to the next comment below, which is from Mei Wong, comment 3, which is in relation to the question, can we have a breakdown of the number of Sunrise registrations by registry? And staff have pointed out that there's a list which has been prepared by the CCTRT on their page, and staff's question is, are we asking for more details than this? Susan, you pick.
Yes, David, I think that the issue was that we found that list that the CCTRT was sharing, but what we weren't sure of was its source. And so I think there was a lack of knowledge within our group as to where they got that from and how accurate, I guess, it was. So I think that's what the question was around that document.
Yeah, and this is Jeff Newman. Just to add to that, I mean, if you looked only at the data they got for, let's say, something like .sucks, which says they only got, I think it was 97 or 91 Sunrise registrations, I kind of know just from the activity of our registrar and some other registrars that number is not accurate. I don't know why it says that number. I know it's a lot higher than the number that the number indicated in that. So we would like to know the sources of that data and then be able to do some fact-checking on it.
Kathy, you've got your hand.
Okay. So this is the question. So let me ask you. So this question, can we rephrase it? And is this an accurate rephrasing? So this is going to the registries. Can you tell us by new GTLD, by new GTLD, how many Sunrise registrations you had during your Sunrise period? Is that what we're asking? Great. Thanks for typing that, David. The only thing you might want to do is change who to how in the notes. Thanks. And does anybody think the registry is going to push back or say they can't do it, or is this data kind of easily available from the registries? I would think it's easily available. I'll take my hand down.
Kathy, could I ask a question? Because I'm afraid I lost audio for a few minutes while my internet went down, and so I'm not sure what bullet point we're on or what you're asking.
We're on the bullet point, can we have a breakdown of the number of Sunrise registrations by registry? And Jeff Newman had explained to us that there was some data in the CCTRT report that had raised questions. And so I was trying to figure out if a rephrasing, since some of us didn't understand the question, could be, can you tell us new GTLD by new GTLD how many Sunrise registrations you had during each Sunrise period? David, we might want to say instead of your each during each Sunrise period. Just wanted to make sure that was the right rephrasing of the question. because I think that's what we're looking for is, you know, in a given, you know, in .xyz, how many Sunrise registrations were there? Cool. Great. It looks like we'll clarify that question with the replacement. Okay. Next question, unless anybody objects. Is there anything about the TM claims notice that you think can be approved and that you
want to... Kathy, Susan's got her hand up just, I think, in relation to the previous section. So just before we go on.
Sorry, I've sort of got my hand up in relation to the bullet that you were just about to go on to, Kathy, but also the one two up from that. So I missed it as we were going through because we went straight onto the Sunrise one, but I have a comment about we think so many potential registrants do not proceed further with registering a domain name, and then also the final bullet on that section as well. Is there anything about the claims notice that can be improved? I don't believe that we should be asking those questions of registries. I don't think that they are the ones who have the information, who have information to answer those questions. They could give us their opinions, but we're asking them to speculate, and their speculation in that regard is no different to anyone else's speculation, because the registries are not the ones who have the relationship with the registrant, so they're not the ones trying to register and then deciding not to proceed. They don't have a relationship with the registrant until the registration happens. So in any case where someone receives a claims notice and doesn't do anything or doesn't understand it, the registry don't know that. The registrar knows that, but the registry doesn't.
Susan, this is Kathy. We've respectfully disagreed on this before, and I drafted these questions because I think there's ample evidence that the registries do have a relationship with the registrants in the new GTLDs, particularly for anchor tenants, particularly for people they're trying to bring in at the very beginning to kind of open up the top-level domain. And, in fact, and you can call it anecdotal, but a lot of what we're working with is anecdotal. Brett Fawcett was the one who hit us between the eyes on this in Helsinki. I mean, he was really mad, and he knew exactly what his registrants had gone through.
Kathy, this is Jeff. If I could just jump in as well. I think we got to be careful with Brett because Uniregistry is both a registry and a registrar, and so I'm not sure in what capacity he was coming to you on. In other words, it may be right that it's an anchor tenant issue, but it may be that they were forcing anchor tenants to come through their registrar.
So let me ask you, is there a downside to ask? What's the downside to asking a registry? If they don't want to answer, they don't answer. But we do know it's a 93.7 turnaround rate.
I don't think we should be asking them the question, because if we're going to ask them the question, we should ask it to everyone. And we're already asking questions to the world at large. We've issued a request for examples of problems already to everyone. This is asking the registries to speculate about something they don't know anything about, and so I don't think it's a valid data-gathering question. We may want to ask everyone to speculate, but that's not a task for this group.
I mean, if you wanted to just ask something, it would be something concrete. It would be, you know, to the registries and say, did your support get any inquiries from anchor tenants or pioneers or however you want to define it that were unable or unwilling to proceed with the registration due to questions on claims notice? You want to put it that way. I think that would be the only kind of hard, concrete. I will say that when I was with .NYC, with Newstar and .NYC, there were some pioneers, some anchor tenants that we had that started to do the registration, got a claims notice, and then did send a question saying, hey, what does this mean? They all proceeded, but there were some questions that were received. So if you ask the registry in that way for some concrete data of, you know, do you have any support inquiries from registrants about the claims process or notices? That might be better.
Thanks, Jeff, for that proposal. Christine and Kathy, just before Kathy, I allow you to come back, or Christine asked to make your point, I just want to note that it's 5:05 now, and that we only have 5 minutes left, and we're only on page 1 of 6 on this document. Additionally, obviously, the document that was prepared and circulated by Susan is going to perhaps raise further questions that are going to have to be dealt with next week. So in terms of how you would like to structure next week's meeting, I think it might be appropriate at this stage to turn to that and to consider what the content of next week's meeting should be. We've got one item for action next week, over the course of next week, by the sub-team, which is to review that document that was prepared by Susan and to make additional proposals for questions and types of data and information that could be sought, and doing that via the mailing list over the next week. So I'd suggest that just take a couple of moments just now, if people would like to put their hands up and propose how we'd like to take next week's meeting forward and to deal with the remaining 5.5 pages of this document. And I know that Kathy's typing in the chat. Kathy, would it be easier if you'd speak?
It might be faster if I talk, which is, I think I'm okay with just rephrasing. I'd like to think about it, though. And before we take out those two questions, 3 and 5, David, maybe if you could strike them out and track changes so we can keep them there, add just a new bullet point, and that way we can just think about it, especially if we're coming back for next week. I'd really love us to get this list of questions out by the end of next week, because I think timing-wise we're running late for the working group. And I really want, you know, this is really important information that the working group needs. So thanks, everybody. Christine, go ahead.
Thanks. I was starting to type too and realized it might be faster just to talk. And I think that if any rephrasing should also be really targeted to the party that we're asking the question of. So where a registry and a registrar are integrated, I think you need to say, as a registry doing your registry functions, you know, if you have any data from the Trademark Clearinghouse, otherwise you're going to compare apples to oranges. You're going to get registries that are not operating registrars with completely different answers from registries that are operating a registrar. And, for instance, in Amazon's, we take separation extremely seriously. So we don't know what a registrar is doing. So our data, if we were going to respond, would possibly even be different than other integrated registries. So I think if we're going to rephrase the question, we need to be extremely careful that we are asking the question, the same question, so we can compare apples to apples across all registries for the same data. And again, I support Jeff's comment that we can't ask an opinion question because we're just going to get a whole bunch of opinions with no sort of basis for those opinions.
Thanks, Christine. So just before wrapping up, with 2 minutes left, I'll note that the actions then are for the sub-team to review the document prepared by Susan and to make any additional proposals for questions, types of data and information that could be sought for the mailing list. I'd also note that staff will prepare, based upon the comments we've had already on the first half of page one of the sub-team questions, the document we're looking at the moment, will prepare an updated version of that document. But if I could also ask if the team, the sub-team could take a look over the course of this week at the comments that May Wong has made, comments 4 to 9 in particular, which are on page one, and they are the questions that staff has in order to finalise and wrap up. And I think they're really the major outstanding issues on this document, with a view to getting it finalised next week. So with that, if there's no other comments, I'd like to thank you all for your attendance on this meeting next week. Next week's meeting takes place at 3:00 UTC on Friday of next week, and wish you all a pleasant weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
All right. Thank you so much. Again, the meeting has been adjourned. Operator, please stop the recording and disconnect all remaining lines. Everyone have a great Friday and an amazing weekend. Thanks again.